evening, ladies and gentlemen from different departments. This morning we are going to look at redeploying the shadow ministers. We shall determine for the DA now whom we want. So, Mr. Krumbok, watch out. Yesterday it was ANC. Today it is going to be DA. Now, thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Today we are having a hearing around basic education. And perhaps as a way of background, the main objective of the government is for everyone to have a better life, that is, a better life for all. And priorities in this objective, we have five main programs. The first one, not necessarily the first in order, not in the order of preference, is inclusive and accelerated growth, where that creates decent jobs and sustainable livelihoods. The second one is to prioritize education of the nation, to prioritize health, that is, to prioritize rural development, and to fight crime and corruption. And then, in this, we are most affected in as far as growth is concerned, in as far as education is concerned, in as far as health is concerned, in as far as rural development is concerned, in as far as fighting crime and corruption is concerned, but in different ways. For instance, we are looking at growth and what is the contribution of tourism going to be. And then we have international and domestic tourism, and how are we contributing in stimulating growth in tourism, both in schools and in other departments, rural development, in development in general, that is economic development and so forth. And then having said that, is our education suitable for people, for the labor market? Are stakeholders satisfied? How is our interaction with the stakeholders? Where are we? Are they absorbing enough of our students after they've qualified universities? Are we preparing people well enough for universities and technicons and FETs? And if so, perhaps how? Because we've got to look at this as a whole. We cannot look at education as a standalone, but we've got to look at education as a department that is contributing to a better life for all. So given that, in the interest of all stakeholders in the industry, we are having this hearing, after having hearings with the Tourism Business Council of South Africa, with FEDASA, and a number of stakeholders in the industry. So we felt that let us have the side of education so as to learn and grow in our oversight. Because we are doing oversight, but at the same time, the objective of our oversight at the end of the day is a better life for us. Having said that, say, we shall hand over to Mr. Edward Mosue, am I pronouncing it well, sir? Okay, the acting deputy director general on policy and curriculum, to give us insights into your policy, your thinking, the way forward to the future, given that now tourism is a fully fledged department. We have moved a step higher. And then what is your response in basic education? And where are you moving towards? Are we going to be successful in having more domestic tourism after the experiences of the 2010 World Cup? What is the legacy? How do you interpret those things? I'm sure that we are not yet through, but perhaps there are initial thoughts on these things. Over to you then, Mr. Masu.
Thank you very much for the invitation and for the introduction, and thank you also to the honorable members for the opportunity to the Department of Basic Education to make a presentation. I think, Chairperson, in terms of the overall objective that you put, we're quite confident that we may find the Department of Basic Education and the schooling sector generally responding. Maybe before we even start, let me apologize. I know we should have sent this presentation ahead of time for members to be able to interact with it. We would try as much as possible to give more meaning to it with a view that it may provide a broader perspective, with a view that it may then be able to compensate for the late delivery, Chairperson. So we would want to profusely apologize for the late submission of the document. Chairperson, we're taking two important comments about whether our education is suitable or to extent that it can prepare learners for the labor market, especially as it relates to the tourism sector. And secondly, the extent to which our schooling system would prepare learners for the higher education, for the FETs and so on. And perhaps as a way of introduction, you may know that actually last week, the Minister of Basic Education hosted a colloquium with the member stakeholders in education, where she was talking about the Action Plan to 2014. Action Plan 2014 being a sector plan for the schooling system. It is a plan that seeks to drive the way in which schooling would be improved for the majority and for all learners in our system. At the heart of the Action Plan to 2014, Chairperson, is that the Department of Basic Education and together with provincial departments of education seek to address one fundamental problem that has been noted. And the output that it seeks to address is the extent to which we will improve learning outputs for all learners in the schools. So that is broadly how one could summarize. And on the basis of that action plan, the action plan is then supported by many other different types of activities, among which would be the extent to which the curriculum that we offer in our schools would be able to respond to that particular priority in the action plan. So, Chairperson, we thought as a way then of a presentation, we should give a sense of the extent to which our schooling system prepares learners in the tourism for careers in the tourism sector. In this particular regard, we thought it would be important to give you a sense of the number of subjects that are offered in the schooling system. You will note that, and this refers primarily for grades 10, 11, and 12, where we have 29 approved subjects. What this says is that those subjects, like in the sciences, you have a variety of subjects, your information technology, computer applied technologies, mathematics, mathematical literacy. But you will also note the second last bullet on that slide, Chairperson, begins to talk to services. And that services, it tells you the subjects that are offered at grades 10, 11, and 12 that respond directly to the questions that we're asking in respect to this, the tourism and hospitality industries. You will note that there are these three subjects, consumer studies, tourism, and hospitality studies. And I think it was important. It's important that we give a broad overview of what these are. As it relates to the extent to which we find it important to respond to the questions that are being raised at this portfolio committee, we thought it is important to give a sense of how these subjects are actually taken into account. So while you have that whole suite of subjects, the 29 approved, and with more specific reference to services, you will also note that if you look into human and social sciences, you have geography, history, religion studies, life orientation, and so on. Chair, on this slide goes further to take from the 29 subjects that you have seen that are offered in the current context, how learners then get to select the subjects that they finally do. There are subject combinations that are required. A learner who has to write a grade to, or in grades 10, 11, and 12 must offer 7 subjects. And in offering 7 subjects, 4 of the subjects are compulsory, and 3 would be what you call choice subjects. Now, in terms of the compulsory subjects, it's important to note that 2 of the compulsory subjects are actually official languages. One of them, 2 must be official languages that are offered in the country. So it could run from IsiXhosa right up to Afrikaans or whatever the case may be. And in addition to that, a learner would then have to offer either an option of mathematics or mathematical literacy, as well as life orientation. So every learner would have to take 2 subjects, 2 official languages, mathematics and or mathematical literacy. Of importance here, Chairperson, I think it's an important thing, especially for the tourism sector, is the extent to which we would also be, as a system, be able to prepare learners who can converse. An important thing is to note that other than languages that may be official languages, a learner may also offer another language or a subject that may not necessarily be examined by the DBE, but it's examined by other examining authorities, and that could be a foreign language, as an example. We have the IEB that examines foreign languages. It could be French, it could be German, it could be any other language that you have. And it is, and that is a group of languages that is called non-official languages. So that is why you then see that other than the 2 official languages that are part of the compulsory subject, a learner may then also take official other languages that may be non-official languages, which then further begin to give an indication of the extent to which this may also promote, the extent to which we can communicate with those that are not necessarily from our country. Chair, in terms of how this becomes important is that for a learner then to qualify for a national senior certificate, which is your what people would term a grade 12 examination certificate, a matric certificate, a learner must be able to pass 3 of the subjects at 40% and a minimum of 3 other subjects at 30%. Mm-hmm. But one of the subjects that must be passed at a minimum of 40%, the home language that a learner seeks, that a learner takes, must also be passed at home at 40% level. For a learner to pass also, they must meet both the internal and external assessment requirements in each subject. What that suggests is that if there's a project or if there's an excursion that has to be taken as a requirement in terms of assessment in this, a learner would have to take that as well. So, Chair, I thought it was important that we give that broad overview, that we have the 29 subjects in the national curriculum statement, that we also require learners to take a minimum of 7 subjects. Of those 7 subjects that they take, 2 must be languages. And of the languages that they take, one of the languages must be taken at a home language level. But however, a learner may also take additional languages that may not necessarily be among of the 11 official languages, and that is why this is a category of languages that we call your non-official languages, which are examined by other examining authorities. What about then tourism? We've spoken about tourism, and for the purpose of this presentation, Chair, I'm going to speak to 2 particular subjects that are directly responding to the questions that have been asked. And we have, if you recall, there are 3 subjects in the services. We have hospitality studies, we have tourism, as well as consumer studies. Now, the 2 specific subjects that we deem are responding to the tourism and hospitality industry in a broader sense are both tourism and hospitality studies. And you will see that these subjects are only offered from grade 10, 11, and 12. And the reason for that is that in the past or up to now, what we have been having in the system would be your broad learning areas. For a learner who's in grade 1, grade 2, grade 3, right up to grade 9, they would be doing 8 different learning areas. Learning areas that provide for a broad base of knowledge. But then when they get to grade 10, that's when they start to specialize and they begin to select a specific number of subjects that then take them into a particular career path. And the purpose, the aims of tourism as a subject that we offer is that it's a study of activities, services, and industries that deliver a travel experience to groups and individuals. And that's taken directly from our policy documents in terms of that which we say tourism is and we teach to learners. We also begin to give an indication of the extent to which that it would, in the aims, that it would include the behavior motivation of tourist businesses which serve tourists and economic, social, and environmental impact of tourism in South Africa. So a learner that then comes out of that does tourism at grades 10, 11, and 12 would find that all of those specific areas are actually taken in the subjects. What I thought what would also be important is to give members a sense of, while we give as a general aim the broad topic, the broad sense of what we're talking about, it's also important to give members a sense of what then are the real topics that learners get exposed to. Among the topics that are dealt with in the subject tourism are the types of tourists that we get or that we have and the purpose of their traveling. We teach learners about the tourism sector, be it transport, be it hospitality, be it attraction, travel organizing, and support services. So you will see that it's not only looking at a specific sector in tourism, but it actually covers a wide range of the different sectors that we have in tourism. Equally, an important aspect that we have as part of the curriculum is map work in the context of tourism, so that learners who come out of the system with the subject may be in a position to communicate in terms of the destinations that are available. Similarly, we also talk to the foreign exchange concept and the buying power of different foreign currencies as a means of ensuring that learners would then be brought up to speed with respect to the different types of currencies that are available in the world. An important aspect, as you would note, is the influence of well time zones on travel, because it's important for learners to know that there are different time zones in the world, and the extent to which those time zones may influence the travel arrangements and tourist movements. And finally, or rather not finally on this slide, is the extent to which we also get learners to know how to do or to plan for tourism. We've spoken about this. An important aspect as well, Chair, is the extent to which we teach learners to know about South Africa and SADC countries as tourism destinations. Not only do we promote foreign travel outside to European or other centers, but it is more about how we strengthen the whole notion of South Africa and the SADC countries as tourism destinations. An important aspect that we also pay attention to are the World Heritage Sites and the world-famous icons. An important aspect is this whole question of ecotourism and the protection of the environment, because that's another important market and sector in the tourism and the marketing of products. So, Chair, I thought it was important that we give a sense of what the schooling system helps to develop learners in as we move towards as we offer the subject. But then the question may be: yes, you have all of this, but who are the learners? How have they done, and what is their contribution? Because that might be a question that we may ask. On the following slide, Chair, we have tried to give you an indication of the number of schools that are currently offering tourism. Surely when you look at this, you'll note that if you take that there's close to 6,500 secondary schools, you'll note that the number of schools that are offering tourism is 2,270 as opposed to 2,085 that we had in 2008. So you will see that there has been a significant move for schools to want to offer the subject. The breakdown of the schools by province is indicated there. You will note that in the Eastern Cape, there were 300 schools in 2008 that were offering tourism as a subject. And that number has since increased in 2009 to 328. We're waiting for the current examination cycle, because we will then be able to report on the 2010 data finally when all of the learners have been able to write the National Senior Certificate. Similarly, you will see that there was an upward movement in the Free State from 88 in 2008 to 96. KwaZulu-Natal has been the province with the highest number of schools offering the subject, 737, and Gauteng second largest with 353 schools offering the subject. You'll see that in the Northern Cape there are 43 schools in 2009 offering the subject. So, Chair, I thought that was important to give a sense of the extent of the growth of the subject in the schooling system as a means to reach in response to the sector. What we are able to provide here too are the number of grade 12 candidates who have set for the National Senior Certificate, because this is where you are able then to know those that actually finally come out with a certificate from the schooling system. You will note that in 2008 we had 68,000 learners writing, and in 2009 we have 74,000 learners writing that wrote the national the tourism as a national senior certificate. So you'll see there has been some slight movement in terms of an upward movement in terms of the number of learners that have been. Except that in KwaZulu-Natal, while we may have the high number of schools, but you'll see that the number of learners year on year declined a little bit, and that oftentimes is explained in terms of the cohort of intake of learners that we have from one year to the next. So oftentimes you are able to see these variations as a result of the intake that happened at a particular point in time. But generally there's a trend that demonstrates an upward movement of the number of learners that have written. Chair, this slide, while we talk about, I thought it was important to also give you a sense of saying what has then been the throughput. We saw that there are over 2,000 schools offering the subject, and there has been an increase on a year-to-year basis. But it's also important to also know the extent to which learners are doing in the subject itself. Now, at the top of that table where it says L1, L2, L3, L4, L5 and up, and those are percentage intervals. So when we talk of L1, L1 talks to zero, any learner who gets 0 to 29%. Level 2 is learners that get 30 to 39% in the subject. Level 3 talks to 40 to 49%. Level 4 is 50 to 59 and so on. And you will note, therefore, that all learners that fall under the category of L1 or level 1, those are learners that would have failed the subject because a minimum pass requirement is at least at 30%. So you will immediately see there that there are those 5,000 learners that failed the subject in 2009, except that we also then note that the level of distinctions in the subject, you had 1,351 learners of the total of 74,000 passing, or rather writing, 1,351 of those learners got distinctions in the subject. 4,000 of them got between 70 and 79%, and 9,000 of them got between 60. And the majority of them, you will note, are also doing very well in the context that they're getting above a 50% pass rate. So that, Chair, was important so that we give an indication. But similarly, I think if you look on the very last right column of the slide, that slide is an indication of the total pass rate that is achieved in that particular subject, where you had in 2009 the pass rate was 92.4%, and you see at the bottom there we've given an indication of the number of learners who passed the subject tourism in 2008, whereas in 2009 you had 74,000. In 2008, you had 68,000 learners, and the pass rate at that point was 91.8. So there's a clear sense that even with an increase in number of learners, there was also an increase in the pass rate. So we were able to get many more learners passing, and I think that's an important point to make. What this graph shows is also an improvement of what had happened. The red line gives you an indication of the pass rate in the subject in 20, not the pass, the number of learners that passed in 2008, and the blue line gives an indication of the number of learners that passed in 2009. Clearly, you will see that in 2008 there was a peak in terms of the number of learners passing the subject at a 30% level. However, in 2009, the number of learners who passed the 30% level dropped, and there was also an increase in terms of the number of learners that also began to improve in terms of quality, because you see your blue line is now from at the 40% mark and above, it now goes it's above the red line, which therefore indicates that there has been an increase in the number of learners that are passing the subject at each of the intervals that have been indicated. Our view is that we would want to see that entire move, that the peaking of the graph may be even at the 50% level, so that the blue line would be moving in the direction that continuously shows an increase in that particular regard. So that is broadly what we can talk to in terms of the extent to which the schooling system has been able to respond to learners in tourism as a subject. But as I say, not only do we have tourism, there are two subjects that are complementary that also contribute to the whole notion of the support of learners entering the tourism and hospitality industry. And I'm going to briefly talk to the hospitality studies also as a subject. Now, I should indicate here, Chair, that in terms of hospitality studies, it gives a broad aims of what this subject seeks to do. It is a subject that brings interrelated themes in the whole arena of the hospitality industry. And in more specific terms, it includes hygiene, food production, food and beverage service, and client services. So this is where, when we teach learners about the whole aspect of hospitality in the tourism industry. And what becomes important is also to note that these are the themes that are taught in this subject would further help learners to succeed in a particular career path that may be taken in the hospitality industry. The kinds of topics, like we were able to give a demonstration in the is at in for tourism, the sectors in the hospitality, the topics that are covered in hospitality studies would be the sectors in the hospitality industry and career possibilities and opportunities that are available in different sectors. So learners are actually taking a subject at home about these possibilities that exist. Similarly, learners are also spoken to in relation to knowing the cultural and influences on the South African cuisines that get taught, menu planning and costing, the food commodities, the food purchasing, storage and control, issues of hygiene and safety and security in the hospitality industry, as well as the safety features there too related, are also taken into account. What you note, though, compared to tourism, what you note in hospitality studies is that the number of learners that take this subject is a little lower than the number that you have in tourism. And the whole purpose for it, honorable members, is that the infrastructure requirements for this particular subject are high. Because to offer this subject, oftentimes a school may need stoves, a school may need a fully fledged kitchen, a school may need, so infrastructural demands for hospitality studies are higher than you would expect for infrastructural requirements for tourism. And depending on the extent of the investment, that is why you see also that the number of learners in the hospitality studies section are lower than you would often find in the in tourism. And you also see the extent to which the performance of learners in 2009 has been lower. Compared to 92.4% in tourism, you will note that learners in this particular subject have done a little less in terms of performance than we had observed in the in the hospital in tourism. As in terms of the schools, and I think this is an important thing so that we also note the extent to which the subject is offered, you will note that the trends in terms of number of schools that offer specific subjects are almost similar in terms of pattern. You often find KwaZulu-Natal with the highest number because of the population dynamics, followed by Gauteng and Eastern Cape tend to be also within comparable values. You will note that the highest number is KwaZulu-Natal, Gauteng, and Eastern Cape. But, Chairperson and honorable members, you will note in this regard that the number of schools has also dropped. Number of schools that had offered the subject dropped from 446 to 411. And the whole purpose of this has been the extent to which there were investments made into the infrastructure. Because it's important that for schools to offer these, they must have all of the necessary infrastructure available. And that is why the number of schools that had then began to drop year on year. We have spoken about we've given an indication of the number of learners that wrote, and similarly, you will see that other than in the Eastern Cape, as well as Limpopo and Mpumalanga and the Western Cape slightly, in many a province, the number of students who wrote or learners who wrote this subject dropped slightly year on year, and we will waiting to see the impact of the 2010 data for this. Finally, the two last slides talk to career opportunities. A question may then be posed, does the schooling system prepare learners for for careers in the tourism industry? Because our view, Chairperson, is that the national curriculum statement that we offer in schools does not necessarily train learners to be more specific in terms of becoming tour guides as soon as they come out of school. However, it provides the training that is provided in the curriculum, in the tourism curriculum in schools, provides a broad overview of the tourism industry so that learners would come up with a broad knowledge of what the tourism sector offers. And it is only then when they are able to get into higher education and or FET colleges that they will be able then to select a particular niche market or an area of specialization in the industry that they may be able to take. However, an important thing to say is that at the minimum, we know that they have, at the school level, from grade 10 right up to grade 12, we would have exposed them to a wide range and a variety of opportunities that exist in the sector. The tourism subject, as you say, exposes learners to a wide range of opportunities, and they may therefore access any of the many tourism sectors to pursue a career. I should indicate that when the FET College curriculum was developed, the national certificate vocationals that is offered at levels 2, levels 3, and level 4 in the FET college sector, it mapped its curriculum around the tourism and the hospitality studies program that was offered in schools. So to an extent, we know that there is an element of relationship between that which is offered in the schools in the FET college sector to that which is offered in the current in the school system. Chair, an important thing, the department can't do all this by itself. So what we have also done as part of improving and further supporting tourism and hospitality studies primarily as subjects, we also have had to liaise directly with the Department of Tourism. And one of the things that we do on an annual basis, we participate and the department, and when I talk of the department, I refer here to both the department as well as the provincial departments of education, that there's always a targeted intervention at grade 11 learners through the Careers Expo that is hosted by the Department of Tourism, and we know that our schools directly participate. In addition, we have provincial departments of education liaising also with the provincial departments of tourism to sponsor field trips for learners, to support teacher training, and so on. I can indicate that in the tourism, when we celebrate Tourism Month and so on, this is when we also get the Department of Tourism to either make material available that teachers can use for the support of learners in schools. The first element of the annual career expo that is targeted at grade 11 learners, that is an expo that is actually supported by or that is sponsored by the national department, whereas the second aspect that talks to provincial departments of education liaising with provincial departments of tourism, that is also what then happens at the local level. There's a major partnership that we then also have, Chair, on the Global Travel and Tourism Partnerships. This is an international partnership because what happens is that all of the learners that are in the school system are able to participate in a competition for grade 11 learners. And what it does is that you always then get winning learners then finally being exposed to an international market. We know we have two learners this year who have become winners in this competition and are now going to attend and be exposed to international tourism aspects in Paris, and that's the extent to which this global travel and tourism partnership is linked to the types of things that we do. And finally, what the global travel and tourism partnership further does, it does, is that it helps to develop training materials, and these training materials help to support teacher training in tourism. So, Chairperson, we thought we would give you a broad overview of the extent to which the schooling system responds both at the curriculum level to preparing young people in our country to offer the subject. If we were to compare, though, in terms of the number of learners that we have to what the number that takes tourism, you'll realize that this is actually a particular niche market, and therefore it is considered more as a focus so that learners that take this are more would have to be in some form of schools that have the capacity to be able to deal with this, especially when you consider the infrastructural requirements for hospitality studies. Chairperson, I will pause at this point in time, and thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you very much, Mr. Suk. In fact, I do not know, but the schooling system to me seems to be training more workers rather than entrepreneurs. the question of sustainable livelihoods. Are we consciously stimulating entrepreneurship in the school system, but in whatever way, as a subject, or is it in business economics or something or some way? Because if we are all workers, then we are not going to create jobs. We've got to have job creators and workers. And the government alone cannot create jobs. We are not that type of system. So if perhaps we could flag on that. And then secondly, the issue of interaction with the industry. You said that you interact, you have plans to interact with the department, which is fine. But the real cold face now of the industry, the FEDASA, the Tourism Business Council of South Africa, the South African Tourism, the Game Reserves, in that type, stakeholders of education, or you're a stakeholder in as far as they are concerned, but I guess they are one of your stakeholders as well. I know that you are having police and so many departments to interact with. I'm not saying that you're not doing it, but I'm not saying that tourism is the most important area of your work, but perhaps do you have an interaction with those people who are in the industry? Rural development, do you interact perhaps with people in the rural areas, the farmers, the other stakeholders in rural areas? The issue of safety and security. When we talk about safety in tourism, we look at physical safety from crime, injury, and so forth. But we also are looking at roads, we are looking at disease and so forth. And how do we try and influence in these areas and get what they are doing there? And then there are other areas the members will be asking, economic development and so forth. That is not for me to ask those questions. But I was just flagging some of the areas for each, when you respond to include them. So over to the honorable members. We are looking at a short morning. Mamu Zabe, Mamu Che, Mamu Mulle.
He walked into that one. No, he walked into that one. So good morning, everybody. Yeah, thank you very much, Chairperson. Yeah, and the Department of Education, thank you for the presentation. I'm looking at the number of students that write the, that take the subject and write the exams and finally go out to work. The question I would ask is, where are those students now? In other words, does the department follow the students who do tourism in order to check how effective, the course is in terms of enabling them to earn sustainable living? So can we say that those students who have done tourism are in fact using this knowledge, or rather the knowledge is benefiting them to enable them to earn a sustainable living? That's one question, Chairperson. And the second question is based on the numbers, again, of schools and of the students. I'm not quite sure. You know, when I compare Cape Town, Gauteng, and the Western Cape, which are the hubs of tourism in this country, particularly Gauteng and the Western Cape, I do not understand why, for instance, Gauteng and the Western Cape tend to be so low in the students who are interested in the subject of tourism, because there's so much activity on tourism in those areas. What's the relationship between the activities of tourism in the Gauteng, Western Cape and particularly, and the numbers of students who tend to take up tourism? Now, also, one is also interested, you know, in the teachers themselves, in the educators themselves. We may talk about the students, but what we really also need is to ensure that those who impart the knowledge to the students are themselves qualified. Where do they train? Do they train as teachers on tourism, or do they just take it as something that they are interested in because the school is offering it and so on and so forth? Like, for instance, if a student is doing mathematics, I'm expecting that someone who has done mathematics, has got all the theoretical knowledge on mathematics, is teaching that mathematics, physics or whatever. Could we say it is the same, for instance, with tourism? Can we be confident that our teachers are quite well qualified to take up the subject in such a way that it will provide the students with the knowledge that will enable them in the future to not just to obtain jobs, as the chairperson has said, but also to be part of the activities, economic activities, you know, in tourism? Now, on the hospitality sector, yes, you have mentioned a number of things that make up the content of that subject, hospitality. I see you mention hygiene quite a lot, but I don't see anything about accommodation, for example. For me, accommodation, the type of accommodation, is so important in tourism, because the tourists want to choose the kind of accommodation, not only the kind of accommodation that they can afford to pay for, but also, you know, the kind of accommodation that can make them comfortable while they are in the country. Well, why is it not important to include that, for instance, in the curriculum? Chairperson, I think for the time being, I might have other questions later if there is time. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I also thank the presenter for the informative that he has just given us. But I have heard him well when he said, according to the graph that we have seen here, that the school, especially schools that are offering tourism in other provinces, are so low because of the demand of infrastructural demand. So my question, because I'm looking specifically at the rural area, it means rural areas, the schools in the rural areas, because there is a challenge of infrastructure. It means the schools in the rural area, people who are there will always not have the opportunity because of this infrastructural challenges. So I want to know, what is the plan of the department because of this issue. Because when we talk about the education, we don't mean those people who are giving the infrastructure only. Because some of the challenges, it will be in the rural area not having even money to take their kids to. What is the plan of the department to assist the rural areas? My other second question is to check what is the department's relationship between them and the FET colleges. Do they sometimes look at the subject that are being offered, these FETs, if they've got the relationship, these FETs sometimes try to accommodate those disadvantaged people, because there are so many people who are disadvantaged. I wanted to know that. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. I think also let us check whether FETs fall under basic education or higher education. But I think the question still remains relevant. How do you interact with the FETs? Sort of is there any coordination and communication between the two? Then Mama Mule.
Thank you, Chair. I want to check on the, we used to have the handcraft at school, starting from grade 2 upwards. Those things are part of tourism attraction. Now we don't have those issues. They were exposing talents from starting from a kid to a young person. I don't know what happened on those issues. The other one is on the issue of competitions. You can have learners from grade 7, grade 6. They can give you a picture of tourism in your area by a competition. If you maybe give them a topic or a drawing, they can do something that we don't think about, that we'll use by them at the time they grow up. So competitions are important at primary schools, because it's where we get knowledge on how can we structure our areas. I only wanted to check on the issue of handcraft, because it's part of tourism. And we also, because this one is for higher education, I was going to check that we have a challenge of tourism personnel in municipalities. So I was going to check on the subject, because most of us, when we talk about tourism on higher education, we talk about hospitality. I didn't hear clear on the issue of the subject that make a personnel. We are shortage of those people in most of municipalities. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. The presenter mentioned the non-official languages. When he mentioned that he tells us about the foreign languages which need to be taught at our school, whereas we have languages which belong to South Africans, which are not even included, which are not recognized as official languages. What steps are you taking to take those languages on board, like Fen, like Zishangane, like Tonga languages? Because it seems as if these languages are going to disappear. Another thing, our country is so rich with history, and also if you want to plant this richness
you have to do it to our young ones. If you want to keep anything forever, you must teach the young person or a child so that that thing will remain and must have that proud about our country. What the department is doing to assist the young children to visit these historical places. We have caves, we have seas. In most cases I used to see a school towards the end of the year going to visit towns. But I don't see the schools in townships and in the urban areas going to the rural to experience what is happening in the rural. There are so many things that we need that the department should take it on board, especially the young children, to teach them what is happening. It worries me that we are not taking the tourism as a subject at school. We only take this and then make out of that as a tourism subject. Why our children decline, the results are declining instead of going. It's not just because when they have taken this as a subject, at the end of the day, they don't get employment. You know, when we're talking about the 2010, our people were thinking about wonders. That is going to happen with the tourism. But there are people even now who are complaining that they were robbed because they were working as a tourist guide, promised to be paid, but not. But what influence is going to have those who are now taking this as a subject? They not going to decide that, no, let us leave this thing because it has no future. No, thank you.
Prospects for students of tourism. Let us, do you want to clarify something?
Yes, Chair, I was just want to emphasize on this question. The presenter makes it clear that each and every year the school that taught tourism are declining. Do they have some of the mechanism? And then what makes those schools to decline apart from the infrastructure? I mean those who have already the infrastructure, what makes them to decline? Do their department, in terms of environmental impact that will attract the tourism, did they have those relationships that will make even school children to be attracted by those subjects, especially that deals more specifically with environment? At this moment, we are having this challenge of the climate change. Thank you very much.
Okay, I think that is slide 15, if I'm not mistaken. But I think it was also students of hospitality studies, and not of tourism exactly, because of infrastructure. But the nature of infrastructure and what is the nature of the problem is, are we not supplying enough infrastructure? And I think if you can explain a little more on that. Let us have the second round after this round, please.
Chairperson, thank you very much. The questions that are being asked are very complicated. They don't necessarily have a simple direct answer, but I will give as much as possible the extent to which the department and the schooling system would be responding to some of them.
Yes, we are all learning.
Yes.
building a better country.
Chair Pepin, on that note, there was a question on the extent to which the schooling system is and the curriculum is actually helping learners to become entrepreneurs. Are we supporting entrepreneurship development? Chair, I should indicate that indeed there is, in fact, oftentimes for learners that take tourism and business and hospitality studies, there is a subject. If I were to go back to slide to this slide, you will note that in this category of subjects BCM, that would be your accounting, your business studies and economics. Oftentimes, in terms of subject combinations, you get learners that do tourism also taking business studies, as an example, or they may take economics. And a key component in your BCM subjects is actually entrepreneur development. So that aspect is actually taken care of and is being supported. I can indicate, Chair and Chair, that actually jointly with the then Umsobomvu Youth Fund, and now in the context and as also as in conjunction with the Financial Services Board, there has also been attempts to get programs in relation to entrepreneurship and financials into schools as more in a more practical way, and that is the type of relationship that we have, and I may not have spoken to that. And it takes me to the second question, Honorable Chairperson, on the extent to which there is interaction with industry and stakeholders. Maybe let me give a sense here that although not so much in tourism per se, but one of the components that schools are required to do, remember we spoke about learners that pass must have met internal assessment as well as external assessment requirements. Now, when we talk of internal assessment, one of the key things that has to happen is that learners are further exposed to a practical component, what we call a practical assessment task. So learners that do this subject in hospitality and so on, they would do a practical assessment task. And oftentimes, the execution of that practical assessment task would require some relationship with an agency that may have had access, because it gets learners to go out into a real life situation that then gets them to do that. But Chair, you in terms of the extent to which we liaise with the game reserves and the FEDASA, the tourism business, and so on, those are some of the different partnerships that would further be strengthened. At the moment, I can't begin to talk in direct terms as in terms of the one-on-one relationship, but there are schools that we are aware of that have gone to interact. But perhaps what becomes important is the extent to which that particular aspect would actually be strengthened.
In fact, it's at senior level as well, like DG level, director level, CEO level, that type of thing.
Okay, in fact, I can confirm that there's always this relationship. Part of what happens is that many of these stakeholders and industry partners, what they also do, they also contribute in the development. They also make comments and suggestions to the department in terms of new trends that may be developing in the industry as a means of ensuring that those can be responded to. And maybe on that note, let me indicate that honorable members may note that the Minister of Basic Education has, as part of the whole notion of refreshing the curriculum and repackaging it, you know that there has been this process of refreshing and repackaging the curriculum. Part of that process has been to say there are old technologies that may have been in the curriculum, so take them off and put in new developments in terms of the curriculum. And all of that information is actually derived from the different stakeholders and developments that we have. So it is at that level, Chair, that we continue to look at. But clearly, and even at the high strategic level, there is interaction that takes place. But what becomes important, though, for us is the extent to which these partners would be able to support the school in any other area. It may be in the remotest area, because that becomes important. The extent to which young people and learners in such schools may be able to access the important thing. Maybe talking about that as well, Chair, I would need to talk to these, because it partly links to the historical sites, the rich history of our country. One of the key things that our curriculum has and that it promotes is actually indigenous knowledge system. That is integral to what we do. Although it's still a concept, because if you come to think of the diverse nature and the rich heritage that we have, an important aspect that we actually teach, especially in this subject, is that whole aspect of indigenous knowledge system. And the bulk of that has also been demonstrated a whole lot, or maybe at an advanced level for this particular matter, as it relates to sciences more than it may be for the other subjects. There's a question on the safety and security. How do we interact with other departments? Clearly, as it relates to direct relationship with other departments, our view, and it also links to the whole infrastructure development and matters related at that level. We do not necessarily, from a curriculum point of view, interact, but I know that at the level where we want to improve security, both at the level of the school and the surrounding communities, we also run programs that begin to deal with that. But you are asking it more at the level of how the subject itself or the tourism, the whole notion of tourism as a subject for career path begins to ensure that we liaise with other security sections and other safety institutions. Chairperson, on that one, it's a matter that will always be communicated at the intergovernmental level. I think was it Uma Mandlovu, am I right? That who asked the number of learners who write exams, and I think there was a question: are we tracking the learners? Mara, we have not necessarily tracked learners, and I think it's not only for tourism, but I think it's a general education system issue that oftentimes we have in the basic education, we have since developed a learner unit record information tracking system. It is a system that will track learners from grade 1 right up to grade 12 and even beyond. But it is a system that also would seek to ensure that it interfaces with other systems of government, so that we may be able as government to respond and know where our people are from time to time. So at the moment, as in terms of longitudinal studies, because basically what the question says is that have we really done longitudinal studies that would tell us what would happen to a child who may have studied? I don't think there has been sufficient coverage of that particular area. However, our view is that the learner unit record information system, the LURID, that is being developed, will evolve into a system that would be able to go in that particular regard. Why low enrollment numbers, especially in KZN, Gauteng, and Western Cape? I think an important note is for honorable members is that, you know, the National Curriculum Statement, NCS, with its subjects, the 29 subjects that I'm talking about, was introduced for the first time in grade 10 in 2006, grade 11 in 2007, and grade 12 in 2008. So effectively, the 2008 cohort of learners that we are reporting about is actually the very first cohort of learners that would have come out of the system as a result of this. So in terms of the numbers, we're quite confident that there would be growth. Except that, you see, that growth must be accompanied by the support that would be provided to schools to be able to offer, because it also links Chairperson to this whole question of the extent to which schools are supported to offer specific programs. Because one thing you also don't want to do, and it links to the second question of teacher preparedness, one thing you don't want to do, there's choice in terms of subjects that schools can take. But you also don't want to get a school to take a subject and yet they don't have teachers to teach the subject. And there have been instances. where you have had schools take subjects, and they did not have infrastructure nor the teachers, and you pick that up late. And clearly, that is at the disadvantage of the learners that are in the system. So it requires a proper planning cycle and proper planning processes, and it is in that context, Chairperson, that we take it that this whole question of curriculum planning at the level of the district becomes important. One of the critical aspects that we're talking to, though, is that there must be curriculum access for these subjects in all other areas, because it should not only be in specific regions and not in other regions. So there is that element of access, and therefore districts, in terms of how they plan for curriculum access, becomes important. The question on teachers, do we have sufficient teachers qualified? I think this is at the heart of the challenge in the system, that given that these would have been new subjects in many an instance, that clearly the extent to which we have a sufficient number of teachers available would also pose a challenge. But what becomes important is to note that the teacher development framework and the teacher development plan begins to give an indication of specializations that teachers can get into as a means of ensuring that they may be able to continue to support learners. There was also a question, Chair, on accommodation, it would seem from the topics that are covered that accommodation as a topic is actually left out. But it is actually included if one considers, maybe it's not so explicitly stated, but when one looks at the tourism products that are offered, that is offered within that context and not necessarily left out in that particular regard. Chair, there's a question on, and I think it came from one of the honourable members, on the decline, and I think Chair was correct in pointing it out as it relates to hospitality studies. Infrastructural challenges, honourable members, is that as explained, there are schools that have continued to offer subjects, and not only tourism or hospitality studies. It could be other computer applied technology. It could be information technology, because these are subjects that are required. But then they were not then necessarily followed up by the necessary equipment. But if looking at the new plan that the Minister of Basic Education has also spoken to as part of the action plan, is the whole question of infrastructural development for schools. That as we move forward, going forward in this current period, is that one of the critical areas of the action plan to 2014 is the extent to which infrastructural needs of schools will be looked into. And I think it is in that context that the whole aspect of infrastructure for schools, and in specific terms, infrastructure that also supports the curriculum, would also be looked at. We agree that the focus should also not be on urban areas, but it must be applicable to all schools, be it urban, peri-urban, or rural. And it is in that context that, in fact, in the department, we also have a section that's dedicated to rural education as a means of ensuring that it does not become a by-the-way. So there is a section that is dedicated to rural, so that we can understand the dynamics that play themselves out. But equally, Chair, with respect to curriculum access, it also becomes important that subjects that are offered in all other schools can also be available. I can indicate, and I know I'm digressing, but it's also important to know in the context of this discussion, that one of the immediate areas that has also now been taken care of as a result of, from an infrastructural point of view, but from access to other areas, we are now recapitalizing technical schools. And this came as a result of an indication of the need for those schools to be recapitalized so that they can be given new and fresh infrastructure. So that is one aspect and an example of how the department has been dealing with that as we move forward. Is there any relationship between the DBE and the FET College we at the level of curriculum development, as indicated, the development of the curriculum in FET colleges was done in conjunction with the schooling system. So when the national certificate vocational programs that are offered in FET colleges were developed, we also played an integral role so as to ensure that there was that level of integration. But clearly it is true that FET colleges are now in the terrain of the Department of Higher Education and Training, except that when we're still both the Department of Education, we were able to interact even at the more at the direct level. We do, however, further interact at other differentiating levels, because an important thing, we have our interdepartmental committees that also continue to seek that, even from a planning point of view, we would ensure that we do not lose sight of the relationship and the continuity of education from schooling to the FET college sector as well as to the higher education sector. And part of this also finds expression in committees that link to the whole process of the human resource development strategy. So it is in that context, Chair, that we are linking to that particular area.
How can they satisfy your question? Okay, thank you.
Okay,
thank you.
We can go on. Then there was a question from, I missed the Honorable Molewa.
Maluleg.
On handcraft from grade 2. In fact, when the question was asked, I began to laugh a little bit, because part of the revision of the curriculum, not the revision so much as it's the strengthening of the curriculum, life skills component of our curriculum has actually identified that a special period, or it allocates arts and crafts and arts and culture as a specific subject component that has to be dealt with, and it is dealt with in that particular, it may not necessarily be called handcraft, but it has since evolved into being paying attention to your arts and craft and arts and culture aspect of that in that particular regard.
From which level?
It's from grade 1. Yeah, from grade 1. So in grade 1, grade 2, grade 3, you already have learners doing life skills. Remember, I think I've given an indication of life orientation in 10 to 12, but in grade 1 through grade 9, learners do life skills, then from grade 4 it becomes life orientation. So an aspect at that low level already becomes the arts and culture and arts and class component. I think the question on competitions is well taken. I should indicate, though, that one of the challenges that we've had with competitions, and it's not only competitions for tourism, but it's competitions in the sector, is the extent to which these competitions also become available to all children. You see, there are instances where competitions would oftentimes be concentrated in urban areas than they would be in remote areas, and is the extent to which we also make them open and available. And it is the interaction with all our partners that run competitions, because competitions are not necessarily run by the DBE, but they are run by other partners. It's the extent to which partners would also ensure that there is access to those. But there is always direct communication with these on as it relates to opening up competitions, because what we think they do, competitions we take as being a clear support for curriculum, because then learners are able to apply what they have learned in terms of skills and demonstrate that through the different competitions. I think the whole question of shortage of skills in municipalities, we would hope that the FET college sector, as it gets revised and as it gets transformed, it would be able to respond more, even more from that particular level. Non-official languages. The non-official languages that are taught are those that are not taught at the expense of South African languages. One takes note, however, of the big challenges that we still face, even at the level of development of some of our languages, even our established languages. There's also a whole move to want to ensure that we strengthen that particular area. But in a broad sense, the non-official languages are also intended to ensure that we would be able to communicate with our partners as and visitors as they come in. The non-official, and this is not necessarily taking away, and I think it's an important distinction to make, it does not take away from the need to further develop our own languages themselves, but it is the extent to which we would be able to bring a balance and ensure that we would be able to communicate as partners in the globalizing economy. I think the question was then also saying what is it that we're going to what's going to happen with respect to the development of language. I think the language challenges is something that the department has taken careful note of, both at the level at which we would seek to ensure that we further support the development of the current languages, but strengthen all other languages. You will note, Chair, as an example, that one of the fundamental things that we do to learners in the schooling system is that they must take two languages at a minimum, a home language. So every other child in South Africa must take a home language, and a language that is taken at a level that you call a first additional level. And that whole purpose is to ensure that language development is supported, and is supported meaningfully. Clearly, this is, I think, in line with wanting to promote the values of the Constitution that makes us a diverse country. What are we doing about the declining numbers in learner numbers? One of the areas that I think as a system we still have to give strength to and give more meaning to is career guidance. Because I think an important aspect of career guidance is that which will ensure that learners, firstly, are guided and supported to make decisions about careers that they want to. And I think an important time to even make that is an intervention that starts way before grade 10, because it is at grade 9, when they complete grade 9, that young people get into grade 10 and begin to take specialization. But it's important that we also make available to learners information at grade 7, 8, and 9 about careers that are available. I should indicate, for example, that there are many other partners that can play a role in here. There's sector education and training authorities. The CETAs have a role to play. I think private institutions have a role to play, so that we expose young people to the different opportunities that are available, and therefore they can then make informed choices, understanding the growth trajectories that may be imminent. And therefore, we hope that as we strengthen career guidance, that we may be able to respond to some of the challenges that we face in terms of learners taking the subject and so on. Chair, I think I have tried to broadly cover the questions that were asked in the first round, unless I would have missed something. Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Yes, another question seems to be encouraging. How are you encouraging learners to visit historical sites in South Africa? I think that was what was coming from Honorable Zulu.
Yeah. Yeah. Part of how I was that, you see, there's one thing to visit, but there's also something important about knowing the value and where that came out as a means of preserving. Because the indigenous knowledge is intended to ensure that there's preservation of that first, but equally it is the extent to which we'll be able to. But then the visit to schools, I mean, visit to such sites is also a matter that schools are able to take on board. I think an important thing, Chair, and I think it applies to all of us, more than it would also necessarily be, is the extent to which we would also understand the value of certain of our environment. You have an environment. It could be at the school, and you don't necessarily need to go somewhere else to understand what nature has in specific confines. And oftentimes, we find that we have not necessarily taken clear interest in the environment around, and because it is those things, and that is where the indigenous knowledge system concept also becomes important in this regard.
Okay. Let us, the time is 11:30, let us break for 10 minutes and then continue. And then Ms. Bekwara, you will be the first. Or are there any follow-up questions? Or on handcrafts? Okay, let us take 10 minutes and then come back. Questions of clarification, Ma'am Jabe?
Yeah, thank you very much for your question, and also to thank the department for the responses, which tend to make us ask more questions.
No, but we do not have a lot of time now.
I know. So just that, I must say thank you for informing us about when the subject was introduced, you know, into the curriculum, because I had that question in mind as we went to start teaching tourism in our school. But also, I'll follow it up with another question to say, what had actually motivated the department to introduce tourism into the school curriculum? Well, what was in the mind of the department? And also about the the combination of subjects, you know, when one is doing tourism. You see, the reason I'm asking this particular question is because I'm just wondering whether tourism could not have been part of the business studies or tourism and hospitality studies, you know, yeah, something like that. But it looks like the department saw it necessary to introduce tourism as a subject, separate subject. Wow, what was the motivation? Now, another thing that, you know, has been of concern to us for some time, so it's good that we are...
Let me give you 1 minute to
answer. I won't be long, Chetan. You see, we when the department comes to make presentations here, the question of tourism in schools has sometimes come up. But they have not been able, for instance, to give us some satisfactory answers. Because one of the questions personally I usually ask is, does the department or has the department made any contribution towards the content of this subject called tourism, which is under the administration of the Department of Education? In this case, I am now saying, you talk about intergovernmental interaction, but I've not heard you talk about your interaction with the Department of Tourism itself, not just the entities, but the department as a whole, in terms of developing the content, you know, of the subject on tourism, because they are the ones who are handling the area of tourism. They are the ones who know what is needed also in tourism. But has there been any communication in terms of developing the curriculum for tourism in the school? Thank you. What form does it take? If there is any interaction, what form does that interaction take?
Thank you, Chairperson. Manjo, they have covered me in that question, but I want to add that after that they have had that content, then do they then encourage teachers to go and study further so that develops a child from the onset that tourism is there and it's like this? Because really now, I'm sure it's grips and grips, it's not exactly, because we've never had that big like content subject for the tourism. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Mine is just a comment. I'm saying, as we are in this country, in some provinces, we have bad hospitality schools. It's up to the department to make sure that the career guidance is made available so that we are not utilizing those particular schools, because most of the people who are in those schools are the foreigners, because those are the best schools, especially in my province, in Northwest. So this is the best school, but it's not utilized by people of Northwest because the information is not there. Thank you.
Okay. It's time. 30 seconds, Mamole. Then it's time up.
Thank you, Chair. I was going to make a follow-up on the issue of handcrafts and everything. That the subject is there, but it's not physical. They only tell the kids to come with, let's say, a Tsonga kid to come with shibela. They don't do shibela at their own hands so that they can be exposed like what we did in there last time. And the issue of competition, I was talking on not a broad competition, a competition that is specifically for maybe to promote tourism. Maybe that one is not for the Department of Education. Tourism as a department, maybe to liaise with the Education Department to do some competition in schools to expose tourism in starting from young children. And the issue of this home economics, we have a challenge where home economists, they cook this, the food that we can't eat ourselves. I don't know, I should say the Western or what. After maybe a person who is not having money to go to school, doing home economics, he can't do those food for people locally. If they can change the method, maybe to mix with the food from traditional food to make an entrepreneur on catering. For exchange. Thank you, Chair.
Bingo. I think they may not give the best answers, but I think they are learning as well. The needs, the expectations of South Africans, as they are doing a service, and they have to respond all the time. Over to you, Mr. Munawo.
Honorable Chair, thank you very much. I'm learning tourism. I will become a tour guide when I leave here. Honorable Chair, the question on what motivated the department to introduce the subject to tourism. You would recall we used to have many subjects that in the previous period, where we also had higher grade and standard grade. And some of the subjects at that point had also not provided for sufficient breadth and depth of knowledge that would be required, but some of them also in terms of the relevance. And hence, in the transformation process of the curriculum, there was a need to refresh the curriculum and make it more responsive. So as in terms of the purpose, therefore, of curriculum development, it was also intended to have a curriculum that was more responsive, that would get a South African child who would have gone through the schooling system and having been exposed to that, would then be able to compete on different in different sectors, and therefore tourism was one of those subjects. I must clarify one thing in terms of the combinations that we see there. You see, the ones that are in red, for example, if we say sciences, technology, and so on, those are actually your broad learning fields as defined by the in terms of your in the national qualifications framework architecture of organizing the learning field. So while we say services involves Consumer Studies, Tourism and Hospitality, it suggests that those three subjects have some form of interrelation in terms of their design, their purpose. However, for the combination, a learner may combine a services subject with a BCM subject. So it does not necessarily mean that BCM, for example, business studies, must have been together with services. Services is just a broad framework that organizes, if you check on the principles of subject, there's an interrelationship. To extent that you may not want to take hospitality studies with consumer studies as an example, because they have a similar nature in terms of the purpose. The same would apply if you were to think about electrical technology, maybe, and let me see, where you can take mathematics and mathematical literacy. You can't take those two subjects jointly because of the particular slant and the purpose for which they offer. So it is in that context, actually, I thought it was important to clear the learning field issue. What is the department that, and I thought the question is the role, the extent to which the Department of Tourism has contributed to the content of the subject that is offered. I should indicate here, Chair, that with this current process, many a stakeholder, and not necessarily the Department of Tourism, but stakeholders that are in the tourism sector, that report also that have a direct relationship with the Department of Tourism, have contributed to the current design, to the current refreshment process of the curriculum. But as it relates to the direct relationship, although we may not call it a formal ongoing partnership, but we do have an interdepartmental relationship that we, for example, when we speak of the participation of learners in the career expos and so on, that happens as a result of them an understanding that had happened at a senior level between our two departments and the Department of Tourism together with our provincial counterparts. So, but clearly it is an area that may still need to be strengthened going forward because it's not as much formalized on an ongoing basis. I think the two other questions about the best schools and having to ensure career guidance is a comment that we take. I mean, it's a fair comment that career guidance remains a problem. But not only does it remain a problem for tourism as a subject, and it's a general problem in the system. You know, if we come to think of careers that are available and the extent to which young people are made to know, for example, a young person, and I'm not going to use a tourism example, let me use something else. If a young person has to do engineering, Chairperson, that child would not have to take mathematical literacy as a subject. They must take mathematics, and it's the extent to which they are further guided, even at that level of choice of subject that they take. So I think it's an area that we've noted, and it requires further attention to which the department will continue pay attention to. I think the whole question of the competitions we've taken note of, as well as the arts and culture comment that has been made. Chair, I think that is broadly those are the questions, unless I've left something else.
Thank you very much. Unfortunately, we do not have a lot more time. But as a concluding remark, perhaps we have learned that we've got to be more African in our approach, more South African in our approach, look at different things. But having said that, I think you are doing a good job, and we appreciate your efforts, and then you have enriched our insights and deepened them. And having said that, you have done a lot, I think we also realize that a lot more still needs to be done. And as we do more, we learn more. And as we learn more, we realize that we've got to do more smarter. And this is the reality of life for successful nations. If you do not do more and learn more and respond smarter, you are not going anywhere. given the competition. But thank you very much for your input, and we shall use the information in our work with other stakeholders in the industry as we engage going further and as we engage the department. If you are having one line concluding remark, please do so. If you are not, then mercy.
Education people never leave an opportunity to want to promote. Given that we have the current grade 12 exams running, it might be useful for members as they go back that we actually keep on encouraging the class of 2010. You know, we have spoken about how tourism could support, but I think an important matter also has been the extent to which we can support in the remaining 4 weeks or so of the examinations that members and everybody else in our communities can continue to get these young people to hold on, and we hope that it's a matter that we can collaboratively and jointly take forward for the benefit of our country. Thank you very much, Chairperson, for the opportunity to present.
Okay, now let us go and tell them that they are going to pass their matric. We have had more serious hurdles in the past, and we passed. So these 3 weeks, really, compared to more 76, 77, 80s, is nothing. So let them just sit down, read hard, they'll pass. Thank you very much. Then to our reports. Our reports, really, the budgetary review report, we have had a lot of interaction. I think it's a matter of getting a proposal and a seconder, except if there is something really, really significant. That is what I...
Let us know. We have done this report for quite a long time. Then move for proposal of the report with those amendments.
Yes, Mamu Job. Yeah, we received your input.
I must say that I see some nice improvements on this particular. No longer a draft now. This is final, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
The final after we have passed it.
Yes. I think the other things are quite small. The one I was even then perhaps it can be explained to me on page 8. On page 8, bullet number 1, 2, 3, the budget. I think it would have been very effective if we had made those quotations that we made, you remember when we had that presentation here, when we talk of Spain, Australia, and then South Africa. One was 0.8, another one was 0.something, and South Africa was so low. Because I think this is what we are trying to show. It, to me, it seemed as if those figures would have expressed that very, very clearly. I'm referring to that sentence which says, the last sentence, it also does not compare favorably with the budgets of other countries such as Spain, Australia, etc. But if you had just said Spain, you put point whatever, you know what the figures were given here, yeah? And then Australia, then South Africa, point one, because this is what we are trying to show, that ours is so low compared with the other countries. But if someone was reading this, and they don't know what you are talking about, then they won't know, you know, why you are complaining about Spain or Australia. Now, the next bullet, also domestic tourism growth strategy. Is that word finalized? That sentence there which says the domestic tourism focus has been on the upper middle class of society in the past. 5. Therefore, the department strategy should be finalized as soon as it is practically possible. What do we mean it should be finalized? Doesn't the department have a strategy already? But why don't you say it should be implemented? There's no strategy.
They have a strategy, but it's not finalized.
Because I was going to say, if there is a strategy, what you should be saying is that it should be implemented. But unfortunately, I couldn't go through the documents, you know, the strategy documents, to check whether really there is a strategy. Because when you are saying that it should be finalized, you are saying that it does not have the strategy. Are we saying to finalize?
It has, Mamunjobe, but it's a draft strategy. Mm-hmm. It's not finalized. The department was saying here, when they were here briefing us, that strategy is there, but it's a draft strategy.
It's a draft.
Yeah. Okay. Working strategy.
Yeah, that's what I said. Then the bullet on safety and security of solids. Now, this is just a grammatical thing, but to me, it means quite a lot. But the last sentence is not really complete. To continue the work with stakeholders and government in front of the future to address it. If you read it, you find that you would say the sentence is not complete. It doesn't have the strategy.
Okay, I think the department has to continue the work with stakeholders in government and private sector to address these challenges. Yeah, these challenges. I think that will be the thing.
But otherwise, Chairperson, I want to be the first one to propose that the report be adopted.
But thank you very much for your careful distinct eye, ma'am. So you're seconding Mr. Kwala. Okay, and then let us look at the oversight report that has been circulated for a long time and then which is just waiting to be adopted. It is a report of the Portfolio Committee on Tourism on Oversight Visits to the Northern Cape and Limpopo Provinces from 25 July to 6 August.
Can I just remind? Chair, thanks, Chair. The last time when the report was presented to the committee, one of the complaints that was raised by the committee was the report was too long. Then we must go back and refine it and possibly put the executive summary to the report. So our researcher has done that, so the executive summary has been attached to the report. We haven't received any further comments from the members after that. So assuming that they are happy now. With the final product, with the entire report included the executive summary.
Okay, the executive summary goes up to page 4, and then I did not see anything wrong with it. Just summarize what is in the report. Adopt unanimous. Mamakas proposal.
I propose this report to be adopted, Chairperson.
Proposes adoption. Seconded by Mamujo. Okay, that report is adopted, and the final issue is number 5. Of the agenda. Agreement between South Africa and Vietnam on cooperation in the field of tourism has been tabled in terms of Section 231(3) of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, 1936. This one is for purposes of record, and then I think also if we want to let Parliament know, we've got to just have one person presenting it. I do not know that the department has it, summarizing it either as a statement or motion, or we make a statement in Parliament about this.
The process is, it has been, we just saw it in the ATC of this morning. So what it has been tabled, so what is going to happen, I will check a copy in the paper stores and circulate the copy of that agreement to all members. And then once it is officially referred to the committee, then we will take up that matter. But again, it's also the same like the one of Kenya and Egypt. We are not required to ratify that because it's of an executive nature. So we are just informed by the executive as a committee that there is this kind of agreement between South Africa and Vietnam.
Yeah, but I think the executive has got to know that we've got to comment on whatever they do, because we are doing oversight. So we shall comment, and firstly to comment as oversight, but secondly to inform other members, because we have a lot of treaties that members do not know of, but they have approved them. Just comes Stockholm Distinct Treaty, Ramsar Treaty, and so forth. And then when you look at it, you find that the department that has not done anything about it because we did not know the content. So it is our duty. You see, Vietnam, what treaty or whatever, then we know about it so that we can do our oversight. But otherwise, thank you very much to each and every member and every staff member for your patience and attention in this meeting, and we are released for the next meeting. That is the Women's Caucus. So the men are going to be represented by Mr. Farai.